Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Happy Thursday to you. This is a very special Thursday, because this is the 75th anniversary of D-Day. Canadian, British, American forces 75 years ago today storming the beaches at Normandy. It is amazing the history of this, because I think President Trump said it exactly right earlier today. It was good versus evil. In simple phraseology, that's exactly what it was. Good versus evil. And they tried to set it up, and part of this was the best laid plans. Part of it worked out perfectly. And the actual invasion itself, get to that in a second. Here's the fake out. There were actually two principal fake outs. One was they led the Nazis. Remember, Nazi Germany also controlled Norway. And they led the Nazis to believe that Norway was a potential target. Because of that, the Nazis left 13 divisions in Norway, didn't move them. Next was Calais. They wanted them to believe that Calais was going to be the invasion point, and that the leader of that was George Patton. They made them believe Patton was going around England and they made them think he was commanding and training troops, which he was not. Okay, so that part, the fake out part, worked. Calais was heavily fortified. Norway was fortified. Then the invasion. Paratroopers go in on June 5th. They don't land anywhere near where they're supposed to land. Part of the reason was anti-aircraft fire forced them to jump sooner than they wanted to. Invasion force. It was supposed to be in the twilight. Nope. Past twilight, far more exposed. What this showed in the end was the incredible ingenuity of American forces, because they had to make up a lot of this on the fly, and they did. One area they thought they'd be 10 miles in by the end of the day, and they were 10 yards in. Canadian forces, I want to say the Canadian forces were Juno Beach, incredible. British forces, Montgomery was able to finally rally up on French soil. And of course, the American forces, Utah Beach didn't have the same resistance as Omaha Beach. There are nearly 9,400 Americans buried in the American cemetery in Normandy. I believe better than 2,500 were killed on actual D-Day itself. There's a town in Virginia, Bedford, Virginia. It's a town of 6,200. In 1944, Bedford, Virginia had a population of 3,200. Per capita, they suffered the greatest losses on D-Day. 16 Bedford, Virginia soldiers died on D-Day. Three more died days after. 19 out of 3,200 in that town. But the ingenuity that the Americans showed to overcome the obstacles, and of course the great speech that President Reagan made in 1984 on the 40th anniversary, where he talked about the boys of Pointe Hoc, the Rangers, 225 up, 90 were able to get through. Every time a rope was cut, somebody else would go and throw another rope up there. Somebody gets shot, unfortunately, somebody else would grab the rope, they'd go. This is how you save continents. This is how you save planets. We are, you know, why do I bring this up to start the show today? Who knows what the world would have looked like if this had not worked? We're able to sit here and argue about who the starting quarterback will be. We're able to sit here and talk about whether Bryce Harper can hit 300. We can sit here and talk about Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, because all of us have the freedom to talk about whatever we wish. Whatever we wish. And that's because somebody else was out there laying their life on the line, not just for Europe, but for us. And by the way, let's not forget the forgotten part. The French resistance and the French people have never received enough credit in the invasion, because it's always been, they were rescued. Once the Americans, British and Canadians hit there, the French people were incredible, pointing out, look, there's a problem there, there's a problem there, this is how you can get through here, you're going to have a fight over there. You know, and they were risking their lives by doing it. So, you know, they've never received enough credit, and they should. So I just wanted to start the show with that, that it's a recognition. I mean, I was born 13 and a half years after D-Day. So obviously everything I heard about it was, you know, was from my parents, my grandparents, you know, and I've done a lot of reading about it. But you have to have, you know, when we talk about sports, we do use military terms all the time. And we do talk about, you know, heroic sporting moments, courageous sporting moments. Yet the reality is, these were the heroic moments. These were the courageous moments. Your best friend next to you gets killed. Suddenly now you're hiding behind him as protection. They asked one of the D-Day soldiers today, and this is, you know, they do these major commemorations every 5 years. There is a very real possibility that no D-Day survivors will be there for the 80th. For obvious reasons, that all be over 100. They asked him today about bravery. He says, I had fear and I was scared to death the entire time. They said, well, you know, but you were also brave. He says, I had fear and I was scared to death the entire time. You know, he had a smile on his face when he said it. But that's the reality of how it was. But I wanted to start the show with that. I don't think you can sit here 75 years later and not remember that there are always a series of events that take place that put you in the spot you're in right now. We're in this spot right now where we can enjoy the freedom that we have because of what people before us have done. And one of the items that has been great, especially in the last 25 years, is the recognition of all the veterans. As I grew up during the 60s in Vietnam, there was not the appreciation for the veterans then that you have now. And that's special. Here today, also Special Olympics. The Pennsylvania Summer Special Olympic Games will be taking place here. Competition did get underway about an hour ago. The opening ceremonies are tonight at Pagoula Ice Arena. And then a full day of competition tomorrow. And a lot of competition, especially on Saturday morning. 50th year of the Pennsylvania Summer Special Olympic Games. Penn State basketball news. Penn State will play Wake Forest in the ACC Challenge. So in the end, they got exactly the team I thought they were going to get. I thought that Penn State would get, but this is the odd part. I thought in the Gavitt games, Penn State would get Georgetown and it would be here. I thought Penn State would get Wake Forest and it would be in Greensboro. So that's been my thought for the last like month and a half. Well, Penn State got Georgetown, but the game's on the road. They got Wake Forest and the game's here. It's the second straight year the ACC game is going to be here. It's the second straight year the Gavitt games will be on the road. Changes the pattern up a bit. And Wake Forest already has one guy, Jalen Horde, who after a freshman season where he scored 13 points, 8 boards, like really good player, he opted for the NBA draft, kept his name in. Okay. Okay, it's his choice. So they've got Wake Forest. Penn State has not played Wake Forest since the Fiesta Bowl Classic in 1989 in Tucson. Penn State won the game. Wake Forest was ranked 25th. Dave Odom was the head coach. Penn State won it 67-63. So, Sean, name the only common denominator between that game in 1989 and the game coming up in December.
Let's see. The only common denominator?
The only common denominator.
That'll be, I know where this is, yeah. You'll be calling both of those games. You called the first, you got this.
I'm the only common denominator between the two games. That's it. I'm it.
You demand.
They also played a game in 1960. It's the only other meeting, so they met twice. So Rose Carter texted me today, and she wanted to know if I did that game too. And she said, or were you not born? I said, no, I was two, and I was the color analyst. We'll come back with more in a moment.
And she believed you.
We'll come back with more in a moment. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Should have seen it at our spring barbecue when this song came up. Suits started moonwalking.
Very concerned, yes.
Man, I was frightened, man.
For us.
Oh. Run. Run fast. You know, and then he starts twirling his coat over his head, and then he throws it toward the coat rack, and of course he hits the coat rack, knocks it down. It's just not fun.
No.
You know, like you're fun, Kyle's fun, Matty Ice is fun, you know, Lawrence. I mean, we have a good time. Jamie, everybody, right? And the difference is that they don't try to be fun. They just are. This guy's trying all the time, right? I don't know.
So Laura, one half of the morning show over on 94KX, I was on with her for a couple mornings earlier this week.
Awesome person.
Yes, yeah. Tom was getting some knee surgery on Tuesday and feeling better, less pain, which is great. So filled in for Tom for a couple of days, and I slid in the Matty Ice reference. She hadn't heard that before. She fell out of her chair.
Matty Ice, baby.
Yeah, because they would just call him Matt the News Guy. And it's like, no. Ah, and this, nah, on this side of the window, come on, we call him Matty Ice. So he's now, for 94KX, he's also known as Matty Ice.
You gotta get with the program here.
Yeah.
You gotta get with it, you know? Yeah. I mean, I know I started out heavy today. I got that. I understand. But you gotta get with the program. You know, Laura's gotta understand. From now on, she'll call Matty Ice all the time.
Yep.
Right? I mean, it's just like, I mean, people now come up to me and says, what's the deal with that suit guy? All right, so now he doesn't even have a name anymore.
But no, that was a great beginning of the show today. And for those who didn't catch our story about Howard Hendricks, he's 99 from Sunbury. He did not take part in D-Day, but that inspired him to join the Army also in 1944. You can go to WKOK.com and get more about his story. If you're a long, long time person that's lived in Sunbury. Probably the name Hendrix Auto Body rings a bell. That was his baby. He started that after he got home.
Well,
so God bless you, Howard Hendrix. We thank you.
He went over there and helped save the world. You know, my mom had a lot of cousins. She had two cousins that ended up being prisoners of war. One was captured by the Nazis. And the one that was captured by the Nazis said it was awful, but was able to somehow make it bearable enough. How about that? It was awful, but bearable enough. And he would talk about his experience. But the cousin she had that was captured by the Japanese would never talk about it. He would never talk about it. And for some of these veterans, you know, some of these veterans have not been back to Normandy since that day. They haven't wanted to talk about it. Now, they're talking about it, and you when you sit there and you see the picture of all those crosses and stars of David in the American cemetery, think of not just them, but think of all the friends, family members, parents, brothers, sisters, maybe wives, maybe kids that lost them. Oh. All because they had to somehow stop an insane person and an insane culture. Like President Trump said today, good versus evil. It was a great speech. And President Macron made a great speech, too. Didn't quite get the first part of it. Then I realized it was in French and not translated yet. So, whoops. Madame, Monsieur. I'm like going, okay, I got that part. Then after that, I was like, okay, where's the translator here?
Oui, oui.
I took high school French, but okay. High school for me was a long time ago. A long time ago. So my ability to figure out what the heck he was saying until the translator got on, limited. Couple words here and there, but that was about it. My goodness. Let's see. So we talked about Wake. We talked about, the Phillies, of course, did win. And Adam Haseley delivered his first major league hit last night. It was the game winner. How about that one? What an amazing rise for him. 2 years ago, we had him on the show when he was with the Cutters. And in 2 years, he's the starting center fielder for the Phillies, in part because, of course, Andrew McCutchen tore his ACL. Pirates lead the Braves 6-1 top of the ninth. Red Sox lead the Royals 4-3 bottom of the sixth. Tampa Bay leads the Tigers 3-1 top of the eighth. Reds and Cardinals 1-1 at Busch top of the seventh. Brewers have jumped out to a 4-0 lead on Milwaukee in the top of the fifth inning. Colorado leads the Cubs 2-0 at the end of four. And the Mets beat the San Francisco Giants today 7-3. By the way, Bruce Bochy the other night won his 1,000th game as a Major League manager.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The The SMC Way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The best in the business. Great people, great dealership, great service department. College basketball passed officially the new rules yesterday. In the next half hour, we'll hear from Tad Boyle, the head basketball coach at Colorado. You're like, the head basketball coach? What is he doing on our show? From Colorado. He's the head of the NCAA Rules Committee. Yes, Sean and I both like to go to the top of something. You don't usually go to the bottom of the chain. So that's what we do. So we went to the top of the chain. And if you've ever met Tad Boyle, and I have, we were in the Las Vegas tournament. In fact, Penn State played Colorado in the championship game. I had a chance to talk to him. What an awesome guy. Really great guy. He's done a great job there. We'll hear from him in the next half hour. Michigan, of course, has Juwan Howard as the head basketball coach now. Big doings. Then he hired Phil Martelli last week, the former St. Joe's head coach, which I thought was an important hire. I think when you're a guy like Juwan Howard, who obviously has a lot of, I mean, the people in the NBA tell you he's a really rock-solid coach. But when you're going to the college game, it does not hurt to have an experienced college hand next to you that has head coaching experience. Penn State, for example, is Jim Ferry. Been the head coach at LIU and Duquesne in his career. And he really is in charge of Penn State's offense. Well, Phil Martelli now goes to Michigan to be with Juwan Howard. With that, we bring in Andrew Kahn from MLive.com. Andrew, welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Steve, thanks for having me.
Let's start with Juwan Howard. John Beilein, I know that he'd floated his name out there a little bit, whether it was Detroit or Orlando. So he ends up leaving. Boy, you don't usually hire coaches in late May. What stuck out? We know about the Fab Five stuff. I got it. But coach, what stuck out about Juwan?
They certainly did their homework around the NBA and liked what they heard. The guy's got a spotless reputation in the league. Sort of on and off the court, which was important to them. You're coming from a guy who, was voted the cleanest coach in college basketball by his peers.
Yes.
Players graduated and things like that. So it mattered more than just wins and losses. And then, as a basketball coach, again, we all know he has never been a head coach. He's never coached at the college level, Juwan Howard, that is. But he worked under Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley in Miami. And they liked the work that he had done, with Miami's young big men. That was kind of his primary responsibility. From what I've gathered, the Miami organization, they share a lot of duties. So even though Howard has been linked to Miami's defense, and he did have a say in that game plan, he wasn't a defensive coordinator by any means. They shared responsibilities, but he did work with the big men, and some of their young front court players made tremendous strides, over the last few years under his tutelage. Yeah, I think certainly the connection to Michigan, as you mentioned, did not hurt his cause. He had a lot of people in his corner advocating for him to take on this job, thought he would do a good job. And you saw, if you watched the press conference at all, his emotional connection to Michigan can't be understated.
He's also got a big job to do here, though, because Jordan Poole, Charles Matthews, and Iggy Brazdeikis all kept their names in the NBA draft, which changes the dynamics of the roster. Mm-hmm. Is he, because of the timing of the hire, is he playing from behind here to craft a roster to move forward with?
That's a great point, and I'd say yes, 100% true. The timing was not ideal. Athletic Director Warren Manuel, you know, said it was what it was. He kind of even looked at the positive fact that if it had been, you know, much earlier, he would have had to wait potentially for the NBA season to end to contact certain candidates, including the one they ended up hiring. But yeah, it was tricky as far as filling these three scholarships that they need, that they have open, I should say. Most of the 2019 recruits have already committed somewhere. The grad transfer market, coach described it to me, it's picked over clean. And it's just, there's just not many bodies out there to get. Now there are some, another name, came up today. I think a New Mexico, shooting guard is on the market, grad transfer that, Michigan could potentially be interested in. But, three scholarships open at this point, now we're in June, is not ideal. And I definitely think it is more of a rebuild than a lot of Michigan fans would care to admit. The program is on great footing overall, five Sweet 16s in the last 7 years. Just obviously John Beilein's just the all-time winningest coach in program history. A lot of good things going for it. But in the very short term, it's going to be tough. And the Big Ten is certainly going to take it lightly on the Wolverines.
Having a new coach also means staff turnover. Saadi Washington's mm-hmm. going to stay. But you look at how Michigan's played the last couple of years. Their defense has been outstanding. Luke Yaklich had a lot to do with that, and I believe he took a job at Texas. Yeah. You got to go, and Juwan has to make a decision as to who he wants on the staff. How big a loss is Yaklich because of what he did with them defensively?
Well, yeah, that was someone that, John Beilein knew he needed to improve the program's defense if they were going to be truly elite again. So he went out and got someone who served as essentially the defensive coordinator, and that's what Yaklich was for the past two seasons. And look at the numbers. They don't lie. They were, top three in the, advanced defensive efficiency metrics both of those years. Just really, really strong on that side of the ball. That was their identity. They carried them to the national championship two seasons ago and another strong season last year. So they lose him, which he did get that associate head coach title with Texas. So I think that tells you something about, making that jump. It'll be tough to replace for sure. But it doesn't help that, some of the bodies they lose, including, Charles Matthews, who was just, so key to what they did defensively. But they bring back, Xavier Simpson and John Teske,
yes.
and that will help for sure. But we'll see. Again, I mentioned Howard's, reputation, on the defensive side, and, they'll retain one of the assistants, like you mentioned, in Saadi Washington, who will hopefully, be able to, kind of continue those concepts that were implemented. We'll see where he goes with some of his other hires. We can get to those, but Phil Martelli is one of them. And,
right.
We're not sure about the third yet.
Right. Yeah, a lot of rumors that it might be Howard Eisley, mm-hmm. for example, getting that spot. So let's ask about Phil Martelli. Just on the base that you're talking about, a coach that's been a head coach who's taken his team to the Elite Eight back in 2004, how important was it for Juwan Howard to get a college head coach with that kind of experience at this particular point in his early college coaching career?
Steve, it was immensely important. This was critical. I kind of found out just from some sources during, as soon as Juwan Howard was hired, really in the interview process with him, this was something that came up. And both he and, Michigan administration, believed that this was important to target a former or a college veteran coach. So someone who had head coaching experience was viewed as a plus. And Phil Martelli absolutely has that the last 24 years. You know, as the top guy at a Division I program at St. Joe's, you know, geez, this was really a home run hire as far as that's concerned.
Right.
You know, he was not someone I was thinking about because I didn't really see necessarily the connection between he and Howard. But obviously, it's something that's going to work out, or something that they thought, you know, could work out at least to make it a reality. So yeah, this is big because he's someone that, you know, it's not really so much the X's and O's from talking to other people. It's about just someone who's sat in that chair and knows how, you know, what you have to do to lead a program. There's a lot of things off the court with dealing with media and donors and alums and things like that. And, you know, while they're not necessarily the ones putting together the schedule, sitting down there with a calendar, they still, you know, there's things like that, you know, administratively that come up that, you know, having a guy like Martelli who's been doing it for so long should be an invaluable resource.
Yeah, and suddenly grades come in. Suddenly, you know, you just saw that with Chris Evans, obviously, in football, suspended for the year. But grades come in. You have to deal with that. You got to deal with the number of things that people have to deal with in that chair. You got to be part strategist. You got to be part PR guy. You got to be part psychologist. There's a bunch of things that you have to do. Personality-wise, obviously, you probably haven't been around that much because he's been playing pro ball. But what was the sense you got personality-wise about him that can make him a great fit coming back to his alma mater being on the sideline?
Well, certainly he's got a passion for the university, for the program. You know, he was interviewing for MBA jobs, and so this was the only college job he said he would come back for. You know, and his emotion was very clear. You know, at the introductory press conference last week. So he loves Michigan, that's for sure, and that matters. That matters to the current players. That will matter to recruits. He's a very genuine guy. I was just talking to a former college head coach who's now, you know, in the NBA, and you know, he's had former players who were teammates or, you know, on Howard's staff over the years here. As we may have mentioned, you may have mentioned previously, you know, Juwan had a 19-year NBA career, six in the as an assistant. So he's been around a long time and, you know, interacted with a lot of different people. And they were just impressed with how genuine and, you know, how humble he is. I mean, given his success in college, this guy was part of the Fab Five, kind of a big deal, especially around here. And then, again, just a very long NBA career, top five pick, you know, first $100 million man, all these things. You know, he could carry himself a certain way, but he doesn't. You know, very humble, always asks about, you know, how you're doing, how your family's doing, things like that. That's what people tell me. And that certainly, you know, came across in my very limited interactions with him thus far. So, yeah, they believe they're getting, you know, a good guy in addition to a good coach.
The Fab Five Final Four banners, I believe, are rolled up in archives, I believe.
Yes.
And I know Chris Webber finally came back because it was the Penn State game in football where Chris Webber came back and was saluted on the field. Mm-hmm. Juwan, I know, has openly talked about a Fab Five reunion. What would that mean to Michigan basketball and to Ann Arbor to get all five of them back on the floor at one time just to be honored?
Yeah, it would mean different things to different people. I mean, you know, my memories of the Fab Five they're pretty some of my earlier basketball memories. But for a lot of people, you know, that was really at the heart of their fandom. They were maybe students at Michigan at that time or just big basketball fans, and, you know, they loved that team and, you know, didn't really care about the aftermath afterwards, say. Then there are others that you know, do care about, you know, the sanctions that were a result of, you know, some of those seasons, and might not necessarily welcome, you know, the entire group back or Chris Webber specifically, you know, with open arms.
Yeah.
So there definitely is that group that those people exist. I have met them. And I don't judge, you know, who, however you want to view it. But overall, I think it would be pretty positive. You know, while the current players and you know, all the fans in the student section weren't alive when that team was playing. Oh, as you know, hey, these were guys who played for this school and you know, brought them to Final Fours, and that's a good thing. And seems to be some excitement over getting them all together, and let's give them a standing ovation. But it's going to happen. I mean, that's for sure. They are all going to be back at a game this next season. The banners are a completely different issue, but a reunion, you can count on that.
Yeah. All you have to do is tell the student body to watch the Jalen Rose 30 for 30. They'll be like, hey, great to have you back.
Absolutely, which is getting a lot of play on ESPN these days, as you can imagine.
Absolutely. What are you just very quick, the Big Ten, just an initial thought with several players going pro. So Carson Edwards leaves, dynamics change for Purdue. We talked about the Michigan players going. Nick Ward goes. Amir Coffey goes. Tyler Cook of Iowa goes. Lamar Stevens, for example, at Penn State, comes back. What do you think of the dynamics are of the conference, right? Oh, and, obviously, at Indiana, they had
Romeo Langford.
Yeah, Romeo Langford, go. But what do you think the dynamics now are of the conference after the players that said they were going to stay in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, like I said with Howard earlier, like one of his challenges is that certainly the rest of the Big Ten isn't going to take it easy on him, and I think it's going to be overall a very strong year. I mean, Michigan State's probably going to start the year as the consensus number one team in the country.
Yes,
because they've just had, we did a story on this on MY.com, several weeks ago, just comparing Michigan and Michigan State and the players, through John Beilein and Tom Izzo's tenure that they've lost early. Michigan State just, generally speaking, doesn't seem to lose as many guys early. So they'll bring back the Big Ten Player of the Year, didn't even give a second thought to coming back,
right?
Along with several other talented players on that roster.
Xavier Tillman didn't either. Tillman
exactly.
And Winston both didn't even bother getting an evaluation.
Yeah, which is, fine, but it is somewhat, against the trend that you see, at other schools in the conference and elsewhere. They'll be very good. Maryland should be good. Ohio State should be, better than they were last season.
They got
for
Wesson.
Sure. So I think overall it was, I think probably a, it's hard to grade, from the guys who go and come back. I mean, if you look around, there's, so many players are declared early and kept their name in. I mean, it's basically twice as many that are will be drafted.
87 early entries across the country. It's a 60 player draft.
And and not all those 60, of course, are going to those guys anyway.
Exactly.
There's the international guys, and there's the the rare now 4-year player or whatever. But there are some of those guys. It's not a problem that's just affecting the Big Ten, is my point. But yeah, I think overall, I don't think they were hurt too bad, by the draft decisions, and I think it'll be another strong year for the league.
Yeah, my one piece of advice I always have for underclassmen entering the draft: I hope you took a language in college, because no offense, you might need it when you play pro basketball next year. All right.
Well, it's no doubt. I mean, the one thing I'll say on that is that the system, that's really where my issue is more with the individual player decisions. I mean, they're right. Two other drafts taking place this month, professional drafts, and they go by very different rules. The players just have a lot more information at the time they're picked.
Yeah, hockey and baseball have completely different rules than basketball does, and obviously football. So,
sure.
Andrew, thanks so much. I really enjoyed this very much. Look forward to running into you as the seasons go along.
Steve, absolutely.
Andrew Kahn, MLive.com. Tad Boyle, next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. The Chicago Cubs, as we've been telling you for weeks, that the moment the draft was over, Craig Kimbrell would sign, because there's no compensation once the draft is over. Well, Kimbrell signed with the Cubs a 3-year deal worth $43 million. Of course, the story on Yahoo Sports is already wrong.
But that's all right. Let's see. It says here, not quite the payday for a guy who sat there without much of a sniff of a contract since he got the final out of the World Series in October. He didn't get the final out of the World Series in October. Chris Sale did. Sorry, that's not nitpicking. That's just wrong.
Guy?
Well, that's like saying another pitcher other than Brad Lidge was on the mound when the Phillies won it all in 08.
Right. <You know? laughs> I mean, in other words, if you didn't take the time... No, this is how I look at it. If you didn't take the time to get a simple fact right, I don't know how accurate the... In other words, as soon as I read that, I said, that's it, we're clicking off the article. Done. Don't want to read it. You don't know what you're talking about. I mean, that's what messing up facts does. Oh, that's a simple... No, it's not a simple thing. It shows you don't know what you're talking about. It means you assumed.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.